This is Driven by Data, the podcast.
Welcome back to another season of Driven by Data, the podcast. Powered by Orbition Group and hosted by me, Kyle Winterbottom. We are delighted to bring you season four of Driven by Data, the podcast, and our aim remains exactly the same: to bring you some of the most respected and recognized thought leadership figures from the world of data analytics to share their knowledge, ideas, use cases, and insights across how they've tackled some of the industry's most trending topics and challenges. All that's left to say is sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Driven by Data, the podcast, season four. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Philip Dale, who is the head of data governance at Marks & Spencer. So, Philip, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Great to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. I know we spent a little bit of time together at the Dharma EMEA conference in November, which seems like a lifetime ago now, but we enjoyed some nice pasta and some nice pizza and a couple of beers. So, yeah.
We did indeed.
Yeah, good to see you again. So where we always start, Philip, is by asking our guests to give themselves, I guess, a brief introduction into their background and journey up until this point of time, if you'd be so kind. And I'm quite keen for people to hear this because obviously you come from probably a slightly less traditional data analytics background than many of our guests.
That's true, Kyle. Yeah, I was slightly late to the data party, I think, but most of my career, and look, I've been with M&S for over 20 years now. Most of that's been in frontline retail operations, running some of our stores up and down the country and having some regional roles as well within that. So where you've got kind of multiple stores across your patch. So, and then probably about 5-6 years ago now, I joined a brilliant job in joining our customer service team in our contact center. And I headed up kind of the commercial function there, managed our outsource providers, was supporting actually with procuring technology as part of the digital transformation. But also as part of that remit at the time, my then boss said, just so you know, you've also got GDPR under your remit as well when it launches and when that all comes into effect. So you might want to take a look at that. Which was probably one of the biggest understatements that any line manager has ever given me. But and so that, I guess, sparked the, what are we doing with this data? You know, how are we controlling it? How are we looking after it? And there was a whole team at the time supporting that as part of the, you know, as was in a lot of businesses. And then about 12 months later, I was fortunate then to, we had a really brilliant insights and reporting team as part of the contact center, right? You know, 11 million customer contacts a year. That is rich and valuable to the business. And I took ownership and responsibility for that. And therefore I saw, I guess, the data landscape from both sides, you know, that, you know, we have to have the right controls in place from a regulation perspective for some of the personal data and the highly regulated data, but also how the business needs rich data and good quality data to make, you know, decisions and investment and understanding what our customers want. And actually, when you've got that richness from all of those customer contacts, it sort of sparked that kind of interest in data. And to be fair, even in the early days when I was running shops, right, you couldn't do anything without the data, right? Your Monday morning was your taking sheets, it was your best sellers, it was all of that. So it's like the use of data has always kind of fascinated me and kind of pricked my interest. And then, yeah, so a year ago, maybe 13, 14 months ago now, I came into this role. And, you know, I guess partly because I had a real interest in where the business data strategy was going. We've got a brilliant head of data, Suze, starting our journey from scratch, really, in terms of creating a data function. You know, we're still relatively immature as a business. Brilliant group of people. Leading our data transformation from on-prem to cloud. And as part of that, the governance role came into play. And so, yeah, here I am. And I've got to say, like, the first thing that struck me, apart from anything else, is the sheer size of the opportunity. The other thing that struck me is the data community is just the best community that I've ever felt part of. Like, whether it's inside the business or whether it's externally, it's so welcoming. And, you know, we're really lucky like that. I think people really are, you know, willing to understand and learn from each other and support each other. The pizza and the pasta is helpful, you're right. But I think it's kind of, you know, intrinsic in this community to be really, you know, understanding of each other's dilemmas and challenges. And the good news is, you know, I talk about ours, you know, other people have been through them or other people are about to go through them. And I think that's a brilliant part of the role, which I really enjoy.
Yep. 100%. No, I think you're absolutely right about the kind of sense of community in the data analytics industry more broadly. You know, I think, and I say this a lot from doing this podcast, from what we do day to day, from hosting events, etc., that, you know, most of the time, a lot of the challenges are shared by many organizations. Of course, they might be on a different size and scale, depending upon the size of the organization. But broadly speaking, a lot of the challenges fall into the same types of kind of buckets and categories, and therefore everyone's trying to tackle them together. And I think that's, you know, what brings the data analytics community together. Phil, we've got listeners in 155 countries, I believe, as of today. So most of people, especially here in the UK and Ireland and probably Europe, will know about M&S. But just give us a bit of a, you know, background on the business. And then I guess, you know, your role within that kind of digital and tech function specifically.
Yeah, sure, no problem. I think most people will probably know the brand. I think approaching 140 years old this year. Clothing and home, food retailer, we have, I guess, that those distinct sort of family businesses, and we also have financial services element too. We have a huge international presence now around the globe, either through wholly owned operations or with franchise partners. And like a lot of businesses, I think, like where we are in our kind of history as a business and as a brand, the pandemic changed things for us quite significantly. And it changed things for us because suddenly customers were forced to kind of shop online. And our customer might not necessarily have been your most obvious digitally savvy already shopping online. So we saw that shift, and we saw it shift very, very quickly. And that's helped us kind of ramp up our transformation. It's also given us some challenges along the way. How do you scale for that? You know, how do you then do you make sure that you've got the right presence online, that you've got the right digital experiences, personalization? But equally, how do you make sure that you've got the right store estate as well? And, you know, how are you constantly reinvigorating that store estate so that it's accessible to customers and, you know, giving the true flavor of what M&S as a brand is all about, which is all about, you know, as many people know, as I was, you know, dragged around stores by my grandmother, you know, when I was 5 or 6, it's all about that kind of quality of the product is what people expect. It's quality of service and it's value. And I think those are the three core things that are, you know, those are the things that I remember all the time, whatever role I've done across the business, you know, you've got to come back to. People trust us, right? People trust our brand and our organization. And they're not shy actually in giving, my time in the contact center will testify to, they're not shy in telling us where we're going wrong or equally, you know, where we're doing some things right. But we've got a very passionate customer base. And everybody, most people, certainly in the UK, have an opinion on what we do and how we do it.
Absolutely. I guess for our international listeners, I think Marks and Spencer's, along with possibly a couple of other businesses, but in, you know, I would consider a kind of British heritage business, 100%. Right? Yeah. Cool. Fine. So obviously you took over that role, whatever, 13, 14 months ago, head of data governance. I guess what was the mandate, if you will?
I think there are a number of things that, The critical thing for me was, you know, we've got to, as part of our data transformation from, you know, on-prem to cloud, we talk a lot about the democratization of data. Bringing it into this central platform will enable more and more people across the organization to access the data they need to do their job. And that is kind of, you know, one of our core principles of why are we doing this. We constantly go back to, you know, what's the purpose? Why are we doing it? And that's one of the reasons. But you can't do that unless you've got the right controls in place. So I sort of see my role as is half of it, which is kind of delivering the hygiene factors of good data governance. So, you know, the right people are accessing the right data for the right purpose. We've got the classification of the data's right. You know, is it sensitive? Is it non-sensitive? Is it personal? Understanding all those things. And then the retention periods and policy. So there's that kind of hygiene factor of governance, which, you know, people just expect. The bit that I get really excited about is the bit that is the value add, which is, you know, that trusted data, delivering trusted data to the organization means the quality has to be of the right standard. And equally, you know, how do we leverage our data catalog tools so that people can instantly see, you know, what's on offer to them if they've got a business problem and they need data to help solve it, which inevitably 9 times out of 10 they do. How do they access it? Who's responsible for curating that data and maintaining it? And those are the kind of the value add bits that help us to get to trusted data. I think as an organization, we have loads of data, right? As you would expect us to have, making sure it's of the right quality to make our decision-making process faster, enabling us to have trust in the data is really important, because there's no doubt about it. We have spent time, and I remember this in previous roles that I've done, we have spent time either not trusting the data or spending a lot of time trying to get the right data that we need to do jobs. And the platform that we have now enables us to do that in a way that is conducive to a much more commercially agile business.
Really interesting. I mean, obviously, Phil, you can tell that you are super passionate about this, right? And I guess some of the language that you're using there kind of suggests to me that there's a lot of, you know, importance, and it's probably recognized within the business around like the hygiene factors and quality and trust and a lot of those words that you've used there. I know that you're on a kind of large scale, you know, transformation and kind of executing on as part of a data strategy, but just give us a flavor for what data governance means in a business like M&S in relation to the role it plays in being able to execute that data strategy properly as far as the business is concerned.
Yeah, I think from a look, I see that as being a very, very firm foundations, right? And that having the framework in place, having data owners across the business and data stewards is going to help us to get to where we need to get to ultimately. But it's hard, right? Because culturally, that just doesn't happen overnight. People know that they want to use data that's accurate. That's the easy part. People saying that and accepting that across the organization is quite simple and straightforward as a principle. Getting there with all the permutations of a huge business is very, very different. But the data strategy that we have, which is also very central to the overarching business strategy. And, you know, there's always that question, isn't there, around strategy versus governance? And it's like, you've got to know what your true north is. What is the business trying to achieve? Then we have the data strategy that supports that. And then the governance, I see, this is the foundations. This is what's going to make this sustainable, right? Because if we try and do tactical things, it won't be sustainable. And we're really good in big organizations, not just M&S, but we're really good at doing the short-term tactical to get that, you know, to get that instant gratification of a great result. But actually, you've got to put the foundations in so it is sustainable and it can last. And especially in our world where it's so technology-enabled, you've got to be able to make it fit for the future. There will be new technologies that come down the line. You've got to have a governance approach that can flex to that and can adapt to that so that you can leverage that technology and that benefit all the more. So I see it as an enabler. That's how I approach the job is, this is governance is an enablement function. We're not here to stop people doing stuff. Sometimes we have to, but you know, that's a small part. It's really about enabling the business to make better, faster decisions through data.
Mm, yeah. You mentioned there, obviously, about the debate that the data governance specifically finds themselves in, obviously, is this whole strategy versus governance and which informs which you kind of started to allude to there. But just, I guess, talk us through kind of how you have to approach that internally. Because as you say, there's so much pressure on data analytics teams now, right, to kind of deliver value. And Granted, that's possibly because there's been a lot of money and time invested where that value hasn't been wholly obvious for a whole, you know, mirage of different reasons, which is a completely different podcast episode altogether. But I guess from a, you know, from a pure data governance standpoint, you talked about the enablement there. Just talk us through actually what that looks like in reality of being able to help the business understand that, because I think that's where, as you say, if you were to speak to any business leader, they understand, you know, there's a million analogies out there, right? But obviously everyone uses the house, like, you know, you wouldn't try to build a house on quicksand because it's just going to fall over eventually. But the reality of that situation for many organizations seems to be different, because obviously things like quality and governance are probably not the most sexy thing to be talking about, especially now we've got Gen AI, which I want to ask you about in a little while. But just talk us through the reality of working in a big business where the nuts and bolts of the principles and the concepts are probably understood, but as you say, the actual getting to the point of, okay, enforcing the change of behaviors is probably different.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I mean, in all honesty, the reality is it's really, really hard, because it's a huge organization. It's hugely focused. It's full of brilliant, talented people. But, you know, every business unit will have, to some extent, its own priorities that are aligned to delivering that overarching business strategy. But I think the reality of trying to articulate that from a governance perspective is always bringing it back to, how does this help your priorities, Mr. or Mrs. Executive Data Owner, in whatever business unit they're in? And you have to bring that to life for them. Data quality issues, data quality dashboard. Why should I invest in having a data steward who's supporting this if I don't, you know, when I've got a million other things that I could be investing time, effort, and resource into? And you have to bring out some practical examples of where data quality has prevented additional cost being incurred by the business because the data quality rules flagged an issue. And that issue, we had one before Christmas, which was ridiculous. It was about, like, you know, multi-millions of singles of sausage meat, you know, because of a, you know, trigger happy finger. You know, stopped, you know, challenges in our supply chain. And I think you've got to kind of understand and show that you understand what the commercial challenges are of the business are and how they can be supported by governance. And that's what I kind of link it back to. Does help that I've done the roles that I've done in the business, undoubtedly, because people go, yeah, he's all right. And he doesn't understand how the business operates. Likewise, from my team perspective, it's always, how do we simplify this for people? Because they've got so much to do. And if we keep it simple, the chances are adoption will be a lot better and a lot quicker and a lot more robust and a lot more, to come back to that word I used before, a lot more sustainable.
Yeah. And that makes perfect sense. I was going to say, I think the advantage, Phil, that you've got is that you are probably a trusted entity and that you've been in the business a very long time. And obviously you are not necessarily by definition a data person and therefore understand some of the challenges that these people have had, having been on the other side of that fence. So it probably does give you a leg up, but you know, still, everything you said is massively important, right? It's still about selling in quotation marks, the kind of consequences or the upside or downside of, if we do this or don't do this, here's how it impacts the business. Yeah. And, you know, not just in relation to your job, but also commercially in terms of what we're trying to achieve.
Hi, Driven by Data fans. Greg Freeman, CEO of Data Literacy Academy here. We're aware that one of the biggest challenges facing data governance leaders into 2024 is upskilling and engaging those data steward and data owner cohorts that you'll be rolling out as part of your framework. With that in mind, if this is a challenge facing you today, please visit our website, www.dl-academy.com, where you can register for your free data literacy consultation. And we'll help you build, plan, and map your dedicated data stewardship and data ownership certifications, which will allow you to deliver immense value through your program in 2024.
And I think the other thing is, like, you know, it sort of dawned on me 3 months into the job, Kyle, that my job here was never going to be done, right? And that in some ways is a great thing, because, you know, it's like, somebody else will come into the role and you'll hopefully leave it in a better place than when you first started. That realization only dawned on me when I spoke to some of the data governance professionals who was like, yeah, it is hard yards. It's really rewarding at times. It's really tough and challenging. But at this moment, I was like, I'm never going to get to a point where, like in some of my other roles, I've been able to go, yeah, I've done exactly what I set out to do. 3 years later, I can say that was a great appointment, really enjoyed it, did what I wanted to. This one's going to be different. It's constantly evolving. And that's the nature of the industry that we're in. And I appreciate that. And then the other final challenge, I think, to, you know, your question around, you know, what is the reality? The reality is, as much as those business stakeholders go, he understands the business and his team are likewise, they understand the business. What's really interesting is you then got to go back to that other group of people who are like, well, are you one of us or are you not one of us? You know, are you like the tech teams and the you know, the analytics community and the data science community? Like, what are you trying? Where are you? And it's trying to find that balance. And that, I think, is, you know, one of the things that keeps it, you know, a daily challenge, but one that every day we're moving forward on people understanding what we're trying to do. So, yeah, I think it is difficult. There's no two ways about it. And I do think there is benefit. People who've been in businesses for a long time and understand how the business works is important. But you've also got to kind of commit to your own self-learning in this space, right? And I've kind of immersed myself in that as well along the journey.
Yeah, 100%. No, I think obviously where you and I first met, Phil, you know, you were speaking on an event, right? An external panel event, which obviously getting yourself out there and kind of, you know, yeah, understanding the ecosystem is hugely important. So kudos to you. But I think that's a super fascinating point, because I mean, I hear it in the line of work I do, right? You know, about people maybe looking to move on from jobs because their boss isn't this or isn't that, or is too much of that and not enough of this, or whatever the case may be. And all of these perceptions I just find fascinating, because as you say, you know, you might have a leg up on certain people in one regard, but actually there might be people within your business that looks at you and say, well, he's not actually a data person, does he really kind of get it?
Yeah, right? He doesn't know what he's talking about.
So yeah, no, I find that super, super interesting. You talked there about obviously the scalability of it, and we've had a lot of people on this podcast talk about, you know, kind of building something that is scalable and reusable, as opposed to building in isolation and silos, you know, for specific use cases. But just talk us through, I guess, your considerations as regards to adopting specific data governance tooling. You know, like, why did you choose what you chose? Did that kind of scalability factor come into it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, how ultimately can it be scaled? Can it be leveraged across all the organization, not just within the platform that we have, but, you know, it's a huge organization. I also think that understanding where you are at in that journey is really important. So that whole maturity piece is so important to this, because I see tools all the time, and you know, you've got to, like anything that we invest in today, you know, any business has to be able to provide a return. So whatever you do, you have to be able to prove the value and write the business case. But you've got to be really careful that the organization is ready for the technology that it is deploying at that point in time to get the most from it. And that, I think, is an important part of the assessment and how you do it. So yeah, understand the problem statement and make sure that the problem statement is also well understood across all the key stakeholders who are involved in procuring those tools. Make sure you know where you're at and what the skill set and the capability is today. And also make sure that you're really clear that that tool or those tools will be fit for the next 2 years, 3 years, and the pivoting when it's the right time to will be relatively simple and straightforward for the business to do. I think, you know, it's one eye on the future, like it's always in leadership roles, one eye on the future to make sure that you fit for the future, one eye on the, can we make the most of this now with the skill set and the capability and the culture that we've got across the organization.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. How much kind of emphasis was put on adoption of those tools?
So yeah, a lot of emphasis is reality. And I think, but saying we want the whole business or we want our key stakeholders to adopt these tools is is a really easy thing to say and not so easy to do. I mean, we are fortunate in that we have an absolutely brilliant adoption team, you know, as part of our data function, and they are just brilliant at understanding the practitioner community, what their needs are, giving guidance to us on the best way to approach adoption of tooling on a large scale. So I, you know, like, absolutely get that we are fortunate in that perspective. But you've still got to go back to, will it wash its face from a commercial perspective? And even though we have ways and means of, you know, getting a tool landed within the business, where are we in that making the most of it? You know, do we have 60, 70 people who just jump on it straight away and like, we'll be up and running? Or do we need to do more with engagement, upskilling, training, culturally? Do people believe in it? I mean, data quality is one where, you know, I could literally spend a whole week of my, you know, of a working month talking to people in our organization about data quality, and everybody would have a slightly different view. Everybody would say we need to be doing it. Most people would anyway, but everyone would have a different view of how we could best get there. And so you've got to kind of navigate that. But for me, it's about having a very clear, this is what we need for the here and now. And we've seen some brilliant tools. Some of them we're probably not ready for yet. But in a 2 years' time, we will be. And therefore, we can go on again on that next stage of the journey.
That's really interesting. I mean, obviously, there's also a lot. I mean, the thing with our industry is that it's so tied to the technology ecosystem, and the pace of change is insane, right? There's new tools that are coming out that are doing this and that, and you can commit to something over a long-term 3 to 5 year program, and then actually a year later something else has come out that you're thinking, oh, that would have been nice. Yeah. Maybe we should have waited, which obviously then leads us into, you know, talking about minimizing technical debt and, you know, when you're transitioning out of these tools into something else. How is that designed as part of your data governance strategy to try and, you know, make sure that you're not just racking up loads of tooling debt? Because I guess it can be really easy to say, well, there's all these tools available, there's all these different things that we want to do. If we're getting buy-in from the business, the investment's there, let's go and do it. But obviously you as the leader need to have a focus on, like you said, like, is it washing its face, right?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And technical debt, you know, genuinely, like, that phrase was probably anonymous to me before I came into this role. And all of a sudden, you know, I had that light bulb moment again where it's like, wow, if we don't get this right, if we're not being really clear about what we want, if we don't have that eye on the future. And equally from a governance, like, you know, artifacts, those access, those hygiene factors I talked about at the start, you know, a lot of those weren't in place, but we'd already made truckloads of decisions, right? And so I think the starting point of that technical debt journey is, let's everybody be really clear on what the technical debt is, like, articulate it to the business. It might not be particularly palatable. People might not want that message. And then work through, you know, which are the things that we want to do something about and which are the things that we're just going to go, do you know what? It's fixing it isn't going to give us any commercial value. It's not going to improve the customer experience. So we're going to live with that, unless it's, you know, something that's regulatory, in which case clearly we will fix it. But it's about having that approach that goes, it's quite methodical. Be clear about what it is. Be clear about the bits that will require fixing and how are you going to get there. And then I think you can start to lay out the framework going forward and the technical. When it comes to technology, the requirements are built into that kind of procurement piece, right? So we're really clear that to stop that from happening in the future, we want something that can be flexible so that we're not going to be having to spend hundreds of thousands of pounds or tens of thousands of pounds trying to sort that out. And that's hard. It's actually part of the role that I really enjoy, but it took me a while to get my head around it. Yeah, I think just trying to be really clear with our stakeholders, sometimes you have to deliver that news, which is, you know, not necessarily wanted, but it's just about having a plan for it. And actually, once people realize that you've got that plan and that you are, you know, there will be some things where you go, we're not going to fix it. We're just going to make the right decision is not to do that. But these are the things that we are going to go away and fix because we need to. That's what I think. In my experience, actually, most people go, that makes sense. That's great. Yeah. Let's articulate the plan. Let's build it in. We understand it. Then we can move forward. And for future, let's build it into our requirements when we're looking at new tech.
Yeah. I guess as far as, you know, governance versus strategy of, you know, good data management, how obviously there will be a roadmap, right, of this is where we are now, here's where we want to get to, here's how we're going to get there, here's the use cases that we want to try and tackle. How do you, I guess, manage then the, what I imagine in a business like yours must be fairly frequent kind of ad hoc requests of, you know, oh, we've got this problem, can you fix that? Like, you know, I guess the prioritization piece of here's the key metrics on that roadmap, but also battling the day-to-day of trying to make other people's lives easier.
Yeah, definitely. And that, I mean, I sort of call it a healthy tension because 9 times out of 10, that's born out of the fact that they think that what we can do is actually going to make their jobs easier and there is appetite for it. Like in all organizations, it comes down to that ruthless prioritization. What we can't do is deviate from the roadmap. We've got, you know, very clear plans, very clear objective. And there is significant business value related to that. So we put ourselves under pressure to make sure that we're on track for that. Then I think it's a conversation with other parts of the business that may have their own funding, who might be able to support with that if they believe in it enough. Mm-hmm. Other times it's perhaps around, right, where might there be flex in our next 6 months, 3 months to be ordered to do this? And can we do it in stages? Data quality is a great one for that, you know, because like you need a community of people you need some great almost case studies that are business led that people can understand within the business to then get those ambassadors banging the drum on your behalf. Everyone expects me to stand up and talk about data quality and its importance, but actually if we've got people who are doing it day in, day out in business units, you know, the people that work in clothing and home going, yeah, this has actually really helped us. And therefore it's got scale, it's got longevity within the business. So you're right. There'll always be a tension of wanting to help people because they're coming to you with those challenges and those problem statements. But remaining laser focused on what are we all here to do? What are we signing up for? What are our strategic priorities that we've signed off for this year? Are we consistent with that? Are we aligned to that? And sometimes the art of saying no is an important part of leadership, and not because you want to be difficult, not because you don't want to help people, but because I'm in the hot seat for assessing, you know, what gets the most value in a governance initiative. So it's hard. You're right. It is difficult, but that's kind of the process that we go through. And I always will maintain this, having that strategic direction of the business, knowing that and our CEO has been really clear, data is a significant part of that. Therefore, our data strategy has to be delivered. There's no room for error in this over the course of the next 3 years.
Talk to me then, I guess, really fascinating that the CEO is talking about the importance of data. And I guess, look, you get a lot of CEOs that do, right? But to then say data is really important to our business strategy, therefore our data strategy needs to be executed, and that's, you know, fundamental of importance. How, in your opinion, have you gotten to that point of having that kind of culture of data and its importance? And I guess, how, you know, what's been the impact of the CEO standing up and saying those things, as far as, you know, making yours and your colleagues within the data analytics teams, you know, be able to deliver, I guess, and kind of help to fuel that kind of cultural spread?
Yeah, I think like all businesses, taking a leadership team through that journey is difficult when they have multiple priorities and headwinds and challenges that they're facing into. And it's not always easy, because if we're being honest, like, you know, a lot of this is, to a lot of people in those roles, you know, they don't necessarily, and I'm not saying this about Stuart necessarily, but like, it does take a while to get your head around it. You've got to explain what it is that we're trying to do and what value it is to the business. And therefore, I think it's fine to accept that you're going to spend a lot of time speaking to a lot of our senior colleagues about, you know, that data transformation and what it will deliver for the business in a way that, you know, intuitively they might get it. If it was a product, if it was innovating a new product range, yeah, of course I get it. If it was about how best to deliver that in a store, yeah, of course, straight away people would get it. When it's about data or technology, you know, and I can say this having come from a different kind of discipline within retail, it's quite hard to understand it all. And I spent a lot of time asking probably what people thought were really basic questions so that I could get my understanding around it. So getting everybody on the same page with the right narrative is important and really, really an important part of it. I think the validation of business results, you know, where we've had, you know, supporting the business to understand when is the right time to mark a product down as an example, because the data can tell you that. That is also important. That's the value. That's what gets people hooked. I always talk to myself, what's the hook for these people to want to do what we're asking them to do? And, you know, that I think we've had some really great success stories that have helped. But it's still hard. Like, because once you've had one, where's the next one coming from? Where you can articulate the pounds, shillings and pence value of what you're trying to do. So people see it as important because, and the other thing, sorry, I think I said this kind of at the start, is that we've had examples of where it's taken us far too long to get the data that we needed for a strategic initiative. And those sorts of examples, you know, they live long in the memory of people. How do we alleviate that? How do we stop having to take 2 or 3 weeks to get to the right answer? How do we just have that straight away? How do we move away from, I've got three different versions of this, in theory, the same number on a Monday morning? Or a Sunday night. In most of the cases of our executive team, they're always telling us that it's not right on a Sunday night in various different parts of the business. So that's what it's there to alleviate. That kind of everyone having confidence that the data that we're all using is the right data. So it's not been automatic. And, you know, quite rightly, that group of people have, you know, so much responsibility, and so they're having to think so far out and make such huge decisions about investment and what we can afford to invest as a business. But they get the fact that accurate, trusted quality data is something that we should be delivering for this organization. How they get there, how we get there, they may not necessarily fully understand. And that's our job to kind of inform that.
Yeah. I guess your role in shaping how you talk to different groups of people about this, right? Because I guess, you know, from a high level, if you're talking to the exec team, it's all commercials. This allowed us to do X, right? Which will make perfect sense to them. Whereas, and I've always had this kind of train of thought, you know, someone that works in a department, you know, that's responsible for putting data in and out of a system as an example. Well, oh, great, the business made 10 million quid more last year because of that, but actually doesn't impact my job all of that much, right? So I guess the narrative of how you speak to people in the context of their role and the decisions they have to make is often fairly different. Obviously, it all comes under the same roof of, you know, you want good, trusted quality data for X, Y, and Z reason, but actually how you articulate that probably changes, I imagine.
Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, that kind of that challenge that I talked about before, where, you know, people on the commercial side of the fence kind of get it. And, you know, that enables me, I think, some opportunity to talk to the business about it. Those more technical teams, those who are, you know, truly lifetime, highly qualified data people, that's quite often for me, that's more difficult. And that's because that's where my own kind of knowledge and learning curve needs to come into play. I think what I try to do is try and understand where are their pain points, like, and what are their, the other thing I think we don't do enough of in data is celebrate. I call it trophies. Like, it's really hard. Like, people just take good quality data for granted. Like, it takes a lot of work to get there. So how do we celebrate where the roles that those people do and the importance of those roles in keeping the cogs of the organization going? You know, I came into the role and said, you know, talking to my team around, like, what they do is so difficult and challenging, and they're not delivering cutting edge technology all the time. All the exciting stuff seems to be being delivered by other parts of technology in the business. So I'm like, what are our trophies going to be, right? And our trophies might be, we've got data owners across all our data domains. That is a massive trophy. Let's not underplay what that looks like. We've got, you know, data governance by design in our strategic data set. That is also really important. That's a trophy. And it's similar to those people who are supporting those source systems. You know, what you do is really important. It's really important to actually our overarching strategy. This is what you're delivering for the business, and trying to celebrate more of a success and getting more acknowledgement for their roles across the business. In some cases, it's been actually really quite hard to find who our source system owners are, because they're just so good at getting on and doing their job. But it's like finding them and engaging with them and making what they're doing an important part of that massive data transformation story.
Yeah, 100%. Now, that makes perfect sense. You mentioned there, obviously, about having data governance by design within data sets. Just talk us through that very quickly, because I think that'll be really useful for people to understand.
Yeah. So this was kind of a very early, we need to get this embedded as part of that roadmap journey. As we're delivering strategic data sets from, you know, that transition from on-prem solutions to cloud solutions, we're delivering strategic data sets in partnership with our business domains. And I'm kind of identified that was an opportunity for governance, like to say that as we are signing off these strategic data sets, they have to have some core governance principles agreed as part of that, because it is a brilliant opportunity, right? If you're going to spend this kind of money in an organization, it's a brilliant opportunity to have these principles delivered at the start. And they are classic artifacts. You know, we understand what classification the data is, we understand what the retention period is, we understand who's accessing it, we've got the right access controls. Then critically, everything that goes live as part of a strategic data set has data quality rules applied to it. We have a minimum standard that we expect from a catalog perspective as well. And again, these are difficult conversations, because some of our delivery teams would say, you know, we'd save a lot of time if we didn't have to do that. Well, yeah, but we've got a business volume attached to it, and we paid a lot of money for this tool, so we need to get a return on investment. So really, our data governance by design is just that opportunity. Some of the tech debt is actually stuff that was pre having those data governance by design principles. And those are the things that, you know, to your questions before, how do we prioritize what things then we have to go back and do at the appropriate time? But those artifacts, you know, those core principles are really, really important to establishing what we're about as a function and the value that we can bring. It helps those who are in more, you know, legal, regulated, DPO type roles. They feel, and InfoSec, they feel assured that we've got the right processes in place. And then from our data owners and our data stewards, it's about, you know, them having confidence in the quality of the data that's coming out of the platform. And they can face into their colleagues in the business units to say, you know, we're really clear that this is the right quality. And when we do have issues, we know about them because we've got alerts and rules around it.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I'm conscious of time, Philip, but there's a couple of things that I want to finish on. Obviously, you started talking about your colleagues within the data privacy protection and InfoSec world. I guess, how do you balance the relationship between data governance as an enabler for business performance and commercial performance, and obviously then what those groups of people are worried about, which is,
yeah,
please don't get us fined.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, really good people, really with incredibly important and difficult jobs to do within the organization. I think one of the first things that, you know, did as part of that was to bring those core groups. So our DataCo, actually our overarching data committee, is represented by those sort of three core functions of governance, data protection team, and InfoSec. So we all have kind of skin in the game, I call it, on a lot of the challenges that face our business in relation to data. I guess my role within all of that is to make sure that the processes and controls that we're putting in place are proportionate to the level of risk that we have. So I'm trying to understand from them really like where are we seeing this risk here? What's the art of the possible for the business? Because I will constantly ask those questions around, but if we want to deliver business value, we're going to need to be doing X, Y, and Z. But absolutely, they need to be really crystal clear with me where we go, no, that's a hard line there. We can't go beyond it. These are the reasons why. You go, that's fine. That's totally understood. But it's, for me, it's about like risk management and oversight is a discipline that, you know, if more organizations were better at it, I think people would move more quickly. The organizations would move more quickly. And I think that's what I'm talking about here. It's that risk profile. What is the organization is saying they are prepared to tolerate within some of those areas? And where's the red line? And where we know where the risk appetite is, we go, these are the controls that we're going to put to match that appetite. And that might be anything from, you know, data sharing to, you know, deployment of AI across the organization and use cases. I think there's lots of opportunity, but that core group of the three functions, and we come together and those are the discussions that we're having. And they're not always easy conversations. I think, you know, nobody would expect them to be, but they are ones that are designed to get the organization moving in the right direction, they're having the right controls in place, but enabling this democratization of data, which is what we wanted.
Yeah, you talked about AI there, which is where I kind of want to finish, because I guess everything that you've spoken about there in terms of having a very strategic roadmap of these are, you know, this is what the strategy is as far as data strategy, here's how governance is going to play a part in enabling that to be a success. And then you get every now and then, there's a lot of hype cycles, but every now and then something pretty big comes along, right? Like generative AI and, you know, blows the world up. Especially when you have, you know, business leaders and CEOs that are quite attached to data and see that as a pillar of their business. And, you know, that opens their eyes to, well, wow, this, you know, what is possible with this, which then, you know, leads us very nicely back into your conversations with your InfoSec colleagues, right? who are no doubt kind of panicking at this point. But I guess from a data governance perspective, what's the influence as far as generative AI and the conversation around that? Because I guess if I just give you some context, what I've seen is there's been a bit of a spike or a resurgence around the importance of governance and quality as it relates to data because of this whole focus on, well, what could we do with Gen AI? And, you know, there's obviously different layers of maturity around that in of itself, but obviously it seems to have sparked a bit of a kind of rekindling, shall we say, of actually maybe this governance thing that we've been probably neglecting for a while because it's not sexy might now actually be the thing that holds all of this together for us.
Yeah, 100%. And look, and to be fair, look, as a community, we just need to accept that this is a great opportunity for us. And I don't think we're necessarily going to do anything differently. Like, great governance professionals, whatever the environment, whatever the technology, will always provide value to the business. I say, like, a good governance function is one of the best commercial enablers that a business can have, precisely for this reason. What is the difference, like, that I feel in my role? I think I talk a lot about, you know, when will the organization recognize that it wants governance rather than needs it, right? So, you know, people go, yeah, we probably do need it because, you know, we might get into trouble, you know, regulatory control, brand damage. But when will we actually get to a stage where people go, I don't want to go talk to the governance team because I think I need some help with this? And AI is that subject that is bringing people to my door to say, right, how should we be doing this? Like, what's the right thing? And, you know, what are the controls that we already have today that might support this? What are the controls that we need to build into the future? And actually, that starts a much broader conversation, bringing those other functions in that we talked about. But fundamentally, if you don't have any governance around it, one, a lot of this stuff does require good quality data. Secondly, our leadership teams are getting really excited about it, but at what point will we be able to say, as a business, we have leveraged X amount of value from the AI that we are deploying? If you don't have the right governance around that, you can't articulate what that number is or what the customer experience is that has improved off the back of it. But it's definitely opened up the discussion, and it has started that people wanting to come and speak to me versus people going, probably he's not going to talk about this again. And I definitely sense that, you know, that change in the tone of the conversation, because actually people think we're definitely, all businesses are going to want to embrace it. And at some point in the future, in the next few months or years, there will be something that happens somewhere where everybody will have a sharp intake of breath, I think. And, you know, we'll ask the question of ourselves again. But right now, everybody wants to look at how can it enable their business better, faster. And so it's great to be part of. And I think as a community of governance professionals, we should absolutely exploit that, accept that it's coming and be ready, and take it as it comes.
Yeah, 100%. Couldn't agree more. And I think there's been, you know, many data and analytics leaders that are now, you know, see this as a great opportunity where, you know, data might not have been seen as the strategic asset that they would have liked it to be seen. All of a sudden, actually, let's bring them into this conversation, because we can't do the AI piece without them. So, really interesting. Well, Philip, look, thank you so much for joining us. As always, an absolute pleasure having time to chat with you. And look forward to seeing how the rest of your journey unfolds.
Thank you very much. Great to see you, Kyle.
That's it for this episode of Driven by Data, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week speaking with another thought leader from the world of data and analytics. Until then, please follow Orbition Group on social media if you've not already done so, where you'll be able to subscribe and therefore be made aware of the podcasts as they arrive. And please share, like, and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these too. If you've got any questions or you want to suggest ideas for topics or potential guests, then please feel free to reach out to me. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.